This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the Bet Rivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Francesa Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Mike Francesa Podcast, brought to you, as always, by the good folks at Bet Rivers. Remember, as we get ready for all the action, from Selection Sunday right through the Monday night when they cut down the nets and we get the wild action of the NCAA tournament. Remember, go to the Bet Rivers, down the Bet Rivers app for all of the fun and games, all of the promotional things, all of the games, all of the little things you can get, all the different things you can win, all the prizes, everything else. So check out Bet Rivers for all of your wagering needs. Okay. We all know this. And it doesn't take a genius to surmise it, okay? We are all playing. Anybody who is a fan of the New York Jets or follows the New York Jets, might be a hater of the New York Jets, or is a member of any kind of NFL media that follows the NFL. And remember, the NFL has over 100 million ardent fans, double any sport in America. We are all playing in Aaron Rodgers' cat and mouse game. He loves to get headlines. He loves to garner headlines. We all know this, okay? And everyone in the media plays into his game because look how much attention this ridiculous vice president story got. Aaron Rodgers isn't going to retire to run for the vice president. First of all, he's not even going to be the vice presidential candidate. And secondly, for a third-party candidate who will not get 10% of the vote nationwide if he's lucky, all right, all he will do is disrupt the election a little bit. He is not going to retire from the game he loves and the position he plays to go get involved in that nonsense. But you know what? In the offseason, it's a way for him to garner some more headlines. I think the game he plays is, how many headlines can I capture in one day? How many can I capture in the offseason? He likes to see his name bandied about everywhere. He likes it in bold print everywhere and to be at the top of every cast. And you know what? He does it again. He successfully does it again. But let's be honest, if you're the Jets, you're going forward with the idea, and you should be, not adding, you know, defensive tackles who are overpriced. And I don't have a problem with them adding Kinlaw. They paid too much for him, but I don't have a problem with them adding him. I don't have a problem with them adding Morgan Moses, and maybe he will be their right tackle. Okay? He's better than what they had last year. His pass blocking graded out at 77. You know what? There's not a Jet guy who comes anywhere near that. So if he's the right tackle for $3.6 million plus incentives, God bless him. I'm sure Rodgers is going to want to get Bacteria involved, but you know what? Bacteria is a guy who has been ravaged the last couple of years by injuries. I'm tired of saying it. He's still on the market. Why is he on the market? One, because there's been, and of course I'm talking about Tyron Smith. Number one, he's on the market because there have been constant stories that he's going back to Dallas. Number two, he's probably asking for more money than people think he should get at this advanced age for him. Okay? He's been in the league a very long time. He's going on 34 years old. But he is coming off a tremendous season, and he is a tremendous player. He's a multiple-time All-Pro. He's an 8-time Pro Bowler. And last year, he was easily the best pass-blocking offensive lineman in the NFL, and he played 942 snaps. He allowed 20 pressures on 610 pass-blocking snaps. Sick. 20 in 610. This guy is a premium. This is a Hall of Fame talent. You're going to have to overpay him a little bit. And yes, are you worried that he could wind up injured like he has in a couple of recent years before last season? Hey, do you think anybody in the NFL is going to hand you an all-world offensive left tackle if there aren't some issues? The Jets have to roll the dice that they can get a magical year just like he had last year. And they don't even need him to play as well as he played last year, where he was the number one pass blocker in the entire NFL. For it to be a rousing success. And instead, they sit on their hands and make moves that, hey, I don't have a problem with Kinlaw, okay? He fits their system. Salah knows what kind of guys he wants to plug into that system. Their defense is good. They know how to play defense in the front seven. I would never quibble with that. But they know nothing about how to build a team and nothing about how to build an offensive line. And they continue to show that. They let this guy go back to Dallas or sign with Washington or sign somewhere else and act like, well, we couldn't take the risk. Hey, what are you doing with your quarterback? Do you think he's been injury prone the last couple of years? Is he all world? Yes. Is he a top flight talent? Yes. Is he a injury risk? Yes. So when you have a chance to add in an offensive tackle of this ilk, you don't even think about it. He will anchor that entire line. And then you can plug in the other pieces and draft the guy in the first round. And add a couple of more guys at reasonable rates, like Moses. I have no problem with them adding him. I don't care if they add two more like him. But they need a premier player on their offensive line, and there is one staring them in the face. And he's coming off a great year. He's not retiring. He's not done. He was the best pass-blocking offensive lineman in the NFL last year. He played 942 snaps. Sign him to a 2-year contract. Guarantee it. So you give him a 3-year deal, 2 years guaranteed at a good price. And you know what? You now have an anchor to your offensive line. And you need that in the worst way. This line, you know, you can't say, oh, we can roll the dice on this guy and roll the dice on this guy. They let some good guards go. They weren't cheap. If you were going to get Hunt, you were going to pay for it. If you were going to get Jonah Jackson, you were going to pay for it. And you're risking some injury stuff with him, too. They brought Simpson in. Okay. He's more of a run blocker. But he's an upgrade. Moses is an upgrade. They need upgrades, but they need an anchor. And they have a chance to get the guy who has anchored the Cowboy line for all these years. Hey, did he have other great players on the line? Yes. Is Zach Martin a Hall of Famer? Yes. And probably over his career, because of his consistency, a better player, because he's been healthier. But when healthy, Tyron Smith's a Hall of Famer. Think about that. He's not a good player. He's a Hall of Fame player. He should be signed. Rather than worrying about stupid stuff like Aaron Rodgers and the vice presidency under Robert Kennedy Jr., okay? I understand it makes you laugh. But if you take it seriously for 10 minutes, give me a break, please. All you're doing is falling into his little game, which he loves. I've never seen anybody love it as much as he does. He loves it. I mean, he's quirky. He's past quirky. He's out of his mind, okay? But who cares? He can play quarterback. But he's not going to play quarterback for a month if you don't put a good offensive line of pass blockers in front of him. You know, so much has been made of Barkley. And you know what? I understand it bothers you when he goes to the Eagles because you're thinking of him scoring, you know, three touchdowns and making you look bad. But the bottom line is, Barkley, whether he was here or not here, was not going to be the decisive factor of whether the Giants won or lost. Look at their record with Barkley here. Who cares if he left? Nice guy? Yes. Classy guy? Yes. Talented player? Yes. At a position that has been devalued in this league, that is better played with two or three guys than it is with one guy. Sorry, that's just the way it is. And you don't want to lose based on who your running back is. Because tell me how many times the top running back is leading teams to the championship. And if you're going to say Christian McCaffrey, well, remember, Christian McCaffrey does a lot more than just run with the football. The Burns move, and they paid him a ton of money. But that was a great trade. He is a big-time player. That was a very, very good move by the Giants. That was a really good move. You know, we talked about Chris Jones going back and what Cousins will do and everything else. Fine, that's all. You know, we're talking right now about the Jets and the Giants. And really about the Jets, because the Jets, to me, have to answer personnel issues in free agency on the offensive line. They have not done that yet. Simpson and Moses don't get it done. Tyron Smith doesn't even get it done, because then you go to the draft and you got to draft the guy in the first round. It's about building a forward wall that you can win with. How he's not here already, I have no idea. Now, we are getting word that Cole will miss a month or two. As I said, you don't get MRIs for nothing. And what that means is that we are not going to have any information that makes any sense on Cole or is able to pinpoint his return. You know now you're not going to see him at least until June. I mean, June would be early. But, hey, think positive thoughts. Maybe June or maybe middle June after a couple of week rehab. But when you're dealing with an injury of this kind on a pitcher of this magnitude, there is going to be a thought process that it makes more sense to shut him down. And I would think if they get anywhere near the halfway point of the season, they would probably shut him down for the season, but we're not going to know that. So the Yankees have to go forward now And this is not any pinpoint information. Could miss a month or 2 months or whatever. No one knows what's here. What we know is they're not doing surgery now. They could turn around 3 weeks from now and say, you know what, we don't like what we see, we're going to operate. Anything is on the table now, but what you know is that the Yankees are going to be without Cole for a significant amount of time and could possibly be without him for the season. So the plans that they had for this season, the upgrades that they clearly have made to the lineup, bringing left-handed power in, bringing Soto in, knowing that Soto, remember, is a free agent after the season. So if you go into this year and you don't have the pitching that allows you to be a serious contender, Soto could be here for a cameo, hit 45 home runs, and be on his merry way. Because remember, with his connections and who he is and the year he could very well put up this year, he might want $500 million. The Yankees can't pay him more than Judge. They can pay him significantly, but it is going to be very difficult to pay him more than Judge. And there will be other teams very much in the market, including one very close to the Bronx, that could turn around and write a very big check for Soto once he becomes a New York darling. But the bigger question right now becomes not when does Cole come back, because we're not going to know that for a while now. We might not know that for months. We might not know that till July. What you know is he's going to be out for a long time. And this is now a leaderless staff that has a lot of question marks. And to me, a bullpen that has a bunch of question marks. So the Yankees have a pitching staff that has a lot of question marks. And now they need to go out and make a big move. To me, the move is Snell. I don't think the Yankees can back off what they tried to accomplish this year. The Yankees were not only embarrassed by last year's performance, they actually saw it as a big threat to their business. And that meant they were going to energize their fan base and get them back doing what they want them to do, coming to the ballpark, buying everything in sight, and supporting the Pinstripes the way they expect them to be supported in terms of marketing. To continue along that road now that they have lost clearly their ace for a significant amount of time, that's all we can put on it right now, is call it a significant amount of time. They need to make a move, and I think the move is Snell. I don't think it's anything else. I think that's the move. It will not be cheap, and the price will go up. Because that's the way the game is played. There is now an incredible demand. If the Yankees want to treat this year the way they hope to treat this year, the Yankees wanted this year to be about no-brainer for the postseason, offensive fireworks, which they can still supply. I mean, the Yankees are going to hit plenty of home runs. The Yankees made very significant improvements in their lineup, and I think the guys they brought in are going to do well. I think Grisham's going to do well. I think Verdugo is going to do real well. I think Rizzo will bounce back, maybe not to the point where he hits 30 home runs, but then maybe to the point where he hits 25 home runs. And they have enough of the guys. Now, can they turn around and trade a Torres for a pitcher? Yes. Can they go a little steeper for a pitcher and give up Spencer Jones? I don't think they want to do that, and I don't think there's anybody that could make them give up Dominguez. The more likely thing is bite the bullet on the luxury tax, and go get a pitcher who, to me, is a proven commodity. That's the way this has to play right now. If it doesn't play this way, it could be a frustrating season where they score plenty of runs and have plenty of fireworks and plenty of high-scoring games, but the pitching just doesn't get the job done. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Mike Francesa Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
All right, here we go. MikeFrancesaPodcast@gmail.com. Send any of your thoughts, questions, etc. to MikeFrancesaPodcast@gmail.com. This is Phil in Connecticut. I understand he's a confident quarterback, but for someone who is 1-4 in the playoffs, can you justify all the free agent money Kirk Cousins has gotten in his career? Listen, Kirk Cousins has played well during the season. He's put up good numbers during the season. He has not been a playoff performer. We know that. They obviously feel that with the talent they have at hand and with the new coaching they have, that they can change that dynamic in Atlanta. Guys don't win in the postseason until they do. It's as simple as that. Does Cousins have the ability to win in the postseason? Yes. Does he still have to do it? Yes. Has he been a disappointment in the postseason? A big one. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have ability. He does have ability. He throws a very good football. Andrew, would you say Barkley or Beckham ended up being the bigger bust and disappointment with the Giants? Boy, they were very different. I'd call Barkley's career frustrating. I think a lot of it wasn't his fault. I'd call Beckham's career disappointing because he was the one who ruined what could have been one of the careers for the ages at wide receiver. I mean, I don't think people, you know, when they think about Beckham, and they think about Beckham and me, all they think about is fights, which they should because that's all it was. We were always at it, the two of us. The bottom line, though, is when you realize, and I think Odell has to realize, and, you know, I don't think he does. I really don't. Just how amazing his career could have been. You know, he was, if anything, he was insulting to Eli Manning at times. Degrading. And when you look at what this guy did, I mean, in 12 games, he has 91 catches and 12 touchdowns. Then 96 catches and 13 touchdowns. Then 101 catches and 10 touchdowns. In his first three seasons. Do you know how many times after that he's had 90 catches in a year? None. Do you know how many times since then he's had as many as 7 touchdowns in a season? None. He didn't realize what he had. He could have been amazing. I mean, those numbers were amazing. What he could do was amazing. So, like I said, I called Barkley frustrating. I called Beckham disappointing. And I think he was the culprit in all that. He was the issue in all that. So he has to take the blame for derailing his own career. Peter, why won't the Yankees give Bauer a chance? They might. I don't see him as a given. And again, a lot of baggage. A lot of baggage. So there are other, you know, I like Snell. I think Snell helps the Yankees a lot. I think he'd be very good here. And I think he'd be very good in Yankee Stadium. That's where I would go. Anthony, I like the Brian Burns trade. Do you think the Giants would have made this move if Wink was still a defensive coordinator? Yes. What defensive coordinator wouldn't want Burns? The Giants have a heck of a pass rush now. I mean, they are going to be tough to block without throwing the kitchens. I can tell you now that what this means is that you want, and I could tell you that anyway by Wink not being here, nobody blitzed as much as Wink. And he was good at it. They're going to blitz less because they're not going to have to blitz as much to get to the quarterback. They got legitimately star pass rushers. Burns is a hell of a player. Brian, who is the bigger competitor, Michael Jordan or Tom Brady? I've said this before, and I'll say it again. In my lifetime that I've seen, meaning that I've seen them play games in person, not just on television, in person. So I'm not going back to guys that I wouldn't have had a chance to see. Michael Jordan is the fiercest competitor I've ever seen. He did everything within his power. He played every trick. He did everything he could do to gain an edge over his opposition and to dominate, not just dominate, to take away the will of the other team. I have never seen anybody, I would rank him this way. Now, Tom Brady would be close to the top. He was extremely competitive. Incredibly competitive. But I would rank them Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and then Tom Brady in my lifetime. But I would rank Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods ahead of him. And I've said this, the difference between LeBron has more all-around basketball talents than Michael Jordan had. Now, he was not the quintessential two-guard, which Michael was. And Michael was a better shooter and a better clutch shooter. But LeBron, he could. They both were great defenders in their prime. LeBron was a better, infinitely better passer and infinitely better rebounder. But he's not a quintessential. He's a man without a position. He's more like Magic Johnson in that regard, where you could play him in multiple positions on the floor. You could really play him anywhere. I mean, Magic Johnson played point guard, but Magic Johnson also played center for the Lakers when Kareem was hurt and had an incredible game. So his versatility, but neither of those guys or anybody else. Larry Bird was fierce. Fierce. They say Bill Russell, who, again, I saw him play with, he was a little before my time to make that kind of assessment, was fierce. They say Ben Hogan in golf was extremely fierce. Guys that I didn't see that I don't want to put in the list just because I haven't seen them in person. But I've never seen anybody like Jordan. Jordan didn't even want to think there was, he couldn't contemplate losing. And that's why in the big games, you know, LeBron made teams better. But when they made it to, when they had a big team, Michael would never accept losing. LeBron has lost. Michael didn't. When he got there, he won. because he couldn't even contemplate anything else. That's why he's, I think, stands alone in that regard. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.